Here's something most people don't realize. Great sleep doesn't happen by accident. It starts with what you're sleeping on. That's why I switched to Sheiks. Their bedding is made from the same performance fabrics you'd find in elite athletic wear, but designed to help you sleep better. If you run hot at night, these sheets help you stay cool and dry. If you love that cozy, ridiculously soft feel, they've got that too. Comfort that stays consistent from the moment you hop into bed. And for anyone with an adjustable base, this is a game changer. Their Stay Fit corners are the best I've ever tried. No slipping, no popping off, even when the bed moves. When your days are demanding, Sheiks helps you wake up restored, not run down. Try them for yourself with their 60-night risk-free guarantee. Upgrade your sleep at Sheiks.com.
What would you do if your dream retirement home felt welcoming by day, but wrong the moment the sun went down? How long would you ignore small, unsettling details before finally admitting something wasn't right? If a guest told you something happened to them in your home while they slept, would you choose to believe them? And what if the same bizarre thing kept happening at the same time every night? Precise, patient, deliberate. Would you try to rationalize it? Or would you actually face the darkness? The following experience may or may not answer those questions, but together, we'll find out how one couple handled it on today's episode of The Dark Paranormal.
Live from Liverpool, The Dark Paranormal with Kevin Eustace.
Hello everyone and welcome to episode 3 of The Dark Paranormal. Firstly, a huge thank you still for all of the compliments regarding the changes that we've made and we're still making to the show. Each of those changes have come via your recommendations, and we've tried to, as you can tell, have a mix of old and a mix of new. We didn't want to shock anyone with a complete reface, we wanted to ease things in. Now that doesn't mean there are going to be a lot more changes coming, don't worry, we're all about done with the changes, but I want to thank you sincerely for accepting them as you have. Now, for anyone new, and I think we've got a few people who are new, if you wish to submit your experience to the show, head to the show notes and you can find a link to submit your paranormal experience directly to the show, or go to thedarkparanormal.com and you will find a link there to submit your experience. Also, in those show notes, you can find a link which will give you access to a free week trial at our Patreon at the highest tier. Now on our Patreon, there is the entire back catalogue of our Patreon-only podcast, Dark Bites, now coming into around 180 hours of Patreon-only paranormal experiences that have not been heard by the general public. Plus, if you choose to stay a patron at that level, you will gain access to a new Dark Bites episode every week of the year, even on Christmas, 52 weeks a year. During the season breaks, it really helps to keep that dark paranormal theme going during that silent time on the feed. Plus, for that Patreon tier, we've started a brand new episode series called After Dark, where I take a very informal look at what we've discussed over the last week. And it's a video segment, although you can also receive the audio, and I'm finding that a real entertaining thing to do. I basically just press record, there are no edit points, and I talk for 30 minutes, kind of a flow of consciousness about my opinions on what we've described and discussed in the previous week's episodes. So that's all in the show notes, but right now, we have some questions that yet again have sprung from the back to the front and need discussing immediately. So, it's time. Please lower your lights. Make yourself comfortable, and most importantly of all, leave your disbelief at the door, as we hear all about the bedroom. Hello, Kevin. I've been listening to your podcast for maybe 2 years now, but I never thought I'd be writing in with my own experience. My name's David, I'm 67, and my wife Janet is 65. They're not our real names, of course. We're originally from Cheshire, and like a lot of pensioners, we'd spent the last decade dreaming about retiring somewhere warm. Spain had always been the plan. We'd holidayed in Malaga 3 times before and fallen in love with the place. With the food, the weather, the pace of life. It just felt perfect. So after selling our house in the UK, we had a decent budget. Nothing extravagant. The nicer sides of Malaga were beyond our means, so our estate agent showed us a small villa maybe 20 minutes outside the centre. It was in a quiet area, mostly Spanish locals, a few expats scattered around, but the villa itself was lovely. Whitewashed walls, a terracotta roof, a small courtyard garden with lemon trees that were already fruiting. It needed some work, mind you. The kitchen was very dated. Some of the plaster was cracked, and the bathroom could do with modernization. But it could be ours. 3 bedrooms, plenty of space, and crucially, well within our budget. The agent mentioned in passing, the previous owner had passed away a few years back in the home. A widow in her 80s. The place had sat empty since, which had explained the slight musty smell and the air of neglect. There were still some of her things around. Old photographs, utensils, the odd religious item. The agent said her family hadn't bothered collecting them at all. Which struck me as sad, really, at the time. Janet, however, is very practical and isn't bothered by that sort of thing at all. "Someone's got to die somewhere, haven't they?" she said to me. And I agreed. The price was right, the location was perfect, and we could see ourselves in that property. So we completed the purchase in March, and we were over there by the end of April 2024. That first month was brilliant, honestly brilliant. We were busy with renovations, new tiles in the bathroom, painting the bedrooms a cheerful yellow and blue. We met some neighbours, lovely people. There were a British couple, Maureen and Bill, only 2 doors down, who'd been there 15 years. They were more than helpful. They showed us where to shop, which restaurants were worth it, which local tradesmen were actually reliable. Bill helped me fix a leaking tap in the kitchen, and Maureen brought round a casserole on our very first week, which was kind of both of them. The villa felt welcoming during the day. Sunlight would stream through the windows and we'd sit in the courtyard with our morning coffee, feeling like we'd won the lottery. This was the life we'd worked 40 years for. But I'll admit, even in those early days, for me at least, that place did feel different at night. Colder somehow. Even though the temperature didn't really drop much, the room seemed bigger in the dark. The hallway seemed longer. I put it down at the time to unfamiliarity. We'd lived in the same house in Cheshire for 32 years. Obviously, any new place would take getting used to. Our niece, Sophie, came to visit in May. She's our only real family, Janet's sister's daughter, and she'd taken a week off work to come and see the place for herself. She's always been very close to Janet. She stayed in the spare bedroom, the smaller of the two at the back of the villa. It was a single bed, a wardrobe, and a window that looked out onto the neighbour's wall. Not the nicest room, but perfectly adequate for a week's stay. Everything seemed fine for the first few days. We'd done all the tourist bits, we walked along the beach at Malabata, we had some nice meals out at the restaurants, the ones Maureen had recommended. Sophie seemed to be enjoying herself. taking photos for Instagram, sending pictures back home, etc. On her fourth night, she came down to breakfast looking awful, pale, bags under her eyes. "Didn't sleep well," she said, pouring herself a coffee with what I could see to be shaking hands. "Could be the heat," I said. "Yeah, or maybe the bed's just different, I guess," she muttered. "We didn't think much of it. A new place, different climate, possibly the wine from the night before." But the next morning she was the same, and we hadn't drank. And the morning after that. By her last night, she looked genuinely unwell. Dark circles under her eyes, jumping at any sudden noises, constantly yawning. She'd started drinking coffee like it was water, just to stay alert. The morning she was due to fly home, she finally told us. We were having breakfast in the courtyard, and she'd barely touched her toast. "You don't look too good, love," said Janet. "Oh, I haven't slept properly since I got here." Janet looked concerned. "You should have said something, love. We could have gone down to the pharmacy and got some sleeping tablets." Sophie shook her head. "It's not that. It's..." She paused, clearly uncomfortable. "Well, every single night, at exactly the same time, and I know because I was checking my phone, it's always 3:47. Something pulls at my bed covers." "Pulls at them?" I asked. "Yeah, not a yank, not aggressive. Like a slow, deliberate tug from the bottom left corner of the bed. Like someone's trying to slowly slide them off me without me knowing." She looked embarrassed as she finished her sentence, but then coughed and said, "The first time it happened, I thought I'd imagined it or kicked them off myself in my sleep. But it kept happening, every night, the same time. I'd feel the covers slide slowly down towards my feet, and I'd sit up and turn on the light, and there's no one there. The door was always closed, the windows were always shut." Janet reached across and squeezed her hand. "You poor thing. Why didn't you come and get us?" "Because I felt stupid, Auntie Janet. I'm 28 years old. I shouldn't be scared of the dark. And I didn't want to ruin your excitement about this house. You've been talking about this move for years." "You should have said something," I said, though I felt uneasy. There was something about how specific she was. The same time, the same corner of the bed. That bothered me, the consistency. Probably more than I wanted to admit. "I'm probably just overtired," she said, sipping from her coffee. But I could see she was clearly rattled. She moved the cup away from her mouth. "It's a new environment, there are different sounds, it's my mind playing tricks." Janet slowly nodded and said it was likely just the unfamiliar place. Maybe even a draft or the way the sheets were tucked in, creating some odd movement. Sophie nodded back, but she looked so relieved to be leaving. We hugged her goodbye at the airport that afternoon, and she texted when she landed in Manchester. "Home safe, slept like a baby on the plane. Must have been the bed after all," with three kisses. When Sophie left, things stayed quiet for a few weeks. We'd finished the major renovations. We'd started settling into a proper routine. I'd taken up golf at the local course. Janet had joined a book club with some expat ladies that met every Tuesday evening. Life was good, and we'd almost forgotten about Sophie's weird experience. Almost. It was mid-June when I first noticed there was something off. I'd wake in the night needing the toilet. That's getting old for you. And I'd have this overwhelming feeling that someone was watching me. Not in our bedroom particularly, but in the hallway. Like most villas in the area, the villa had a long corridor that connected all three bedrooms to the main living area. And it was always dim, even with the small nightlight we'd plugged in. I'd stand there in the dark, hand on the bathroom door handle, and I'd just know something was looking at me from the other end of the hallway. The hairs on my arms would stand up, and I'd feel that cold prickle down my spine, like being a kid and you're convinced something's under the bed. I never mentioned it to Janet. I didn't want her to worry. Besides, what was I going to say? I'm a bit scared walking to the toilet at night. I'm a grown man. I spent 30 years working in construction. I've dealt with all sorts. I told myself it was just adjusting to a new house. Unfamiliar shadows. The way the moonlight came back through the windows differently than back home. But then Janet herself started to mention things.
Let's have a quick break to talk to you about Acorns. Acorns wants to show a little love to everyone who's on their way to some money goal. Now, a money goal may sound like something everyone has, but believe me, they don't. And even when you think you do, you don't really take into account the step-by-step incremental measurements that need to be made in order to achieve said goal, which is something I personally don't have the time to do. This is where Acorns do their magic, because they try to take you from where's my money today to that goal. And the way they do that is they focus on where your money is going to be tomorrow. There's two major things I want to point out with this. You don't need a bundle of cash to invest. You can invest your spare change. And the second thing is, I'm fortunate enough that the money I've invested, I've seen grow. And using the app, I can see that visually. They also have a potential screen. It shows you the power of compounding your money and how by doing so, you could grow it over time. Basically, for me, Acorns is an all-in-one. Invest, save, and give your money a chance to grow in one trusted place. Sign up now and Acorns will boost your new account with a $5 bonus investment. Join the over 40 million all-time customers who've already saved and invested over $27 billion with Acorns. Head to acorns.com/darkparanormal or download the Acorns app to get started. Paid non-client endorsements. Compensation provides incentive to positively promote Acorns. Tier 11 compensation provided. Potential subject to various factors such as customers' accounts, age and investment settings. Does not include Acorns fees. Results do not predict or represent the performance of any Acorns portfolio. Investment results will vary. Investment involves risk. Acorns Advisors, LLC, and SEC registered investment advisor. View important disclosures at acorns.com/darkparanormal.
Here's something most people don't realize. Great sleep doesn't happen by accident. It starts with what you're sleeping on. That's why I switched to Sheiks. Their bedding is made from the same performance fabrics you'd find in elite athletic wear, but designed to help you sleep better. If you run hot at night, these sheets help you stay cool and dry. If you love that cozy, ridiculously soft feel, they've got that too. Comfort that stays consistent from the moment you hop into bed. And for anyone with an adjustable base, this is a game changer. Their Stay Fit corners are the best I've ever tried. No slipping, no popping off, even when the bed moves. When your days are demanding, Sheiks helps you wake up restored, not run down. Try them for yourself with their 60-night risk-free guarantee. Upgrade your sleep at Sheiks.com.
They were little things at first. Did you move my reading glasses? I left them on the bedside table. Or I could have sworn I left my keys on the counter. But they were in the drawer. Even that's odd. I don't remember opening the kitchen cupboard. But it was wide open this morning. We both put it down to our age, forgetfulness, the stress of the move catching up with us. We even joked about it. We said, we're losing it in our old age, love. But there was an edge to the humour that hadn't been there before. Objects would be in different places.
not drastically moved, just shifted slightly. A chair pulled out from the table, for example. A book on the coffee table when we'd never read that book before. The bathroom door standing open when we both distinctly remember it being shut when we went to bed. Small things, easy to dismiss individually, but when added together, they all pointed to a something. Then one evening in early July, we were having dinner with Maureen and Bill. We'd invited them over and Janet had done an amazing paella. She'd been taking cooking classes and was quite proud of her progress. We were halfway through our second bottle of Rioja. The conversation was flowing easily, talking about the upcoming feria in town, when Maureen asked how we were finding the villa. "It's perfect," Janet said, a bit tipsy and cheerful. "Best decision we ever, ever, ever made. Can't believe we didn't do this 10 years ago." Maureen and Bill exchanged a look. It was brief, but I caught a flicker of something between them. "What?" I asked, putting my wine glass down. They both looked like they'd been caught. Bill put his wine glass down and cleared his throat. He looked at Maureen, then back at me. "It's probably nothing. But did the agent tell you much about the previous owner?" We told them what we knew. Elderly widow, a property that sat empty for a few years after her death because her family was in Madrid and they couldn't be bothered dealing with any of it. Maureen topped up her wine glass slowly, like she was buying time to decide what to say. "She was a lovely woman, Isabel. We knew her quite well. She used to bring us fruit from her trees, and Bill would sometimes help her with her heavy shopping, etc. But towards the end, the last year or so of her life, she became, well, different. Paranoid, I suppose you'd call it. She didn't leave the house much, even to go to the shops. She once told me that she wasn't alone in the house, that there were others with her." I got panicked and I said, "Do you want me to phone the police? Are these intruders?" She just shook her head. When Maureen finished, the temperature in the room seemed to drop. Janet went very still. "What kind of others did she mean?" I asked. "She never went into detail," Bill said. "But she was quite Catholic. She had crucifixes in every room. Towards the end, we saw a priest come round several times. We thought it was just dementia, in all honesty. She was in her 80s and she'd been a widow for 5 years, living alone. These things happen." "Did she say what she saw?" Janet asked, but I could hear the tension and fear creeping into her voice. Maureen looked uncomfortable. "She told me once, maybe 2 months before she died, that she couldn't sleep in certain rooms anymore. The back bedroom, the small one. She said she'd sealed that off completely. She said she put a crucifix on the door and just wouldn't go in there." She paused and said, "She mentioned that they wouldn't let her rest, that they came at night." "They?" I said. "Yeah," said Maureen. "She said they and them, never it." Maureen confirmed. "Multiple. Whatever she thought was there. We honestly thought she was losing her faculties. Her daughter came to visit from Madrid and we mentioned our concerns. But she just said her mother had always been overly superstitious and overly religious." At the end of that sentence, the table went quiet. "I wonder why the agent didn't mention any of this," I said to the room, but I knew the answer even as I said it. Maureen shrugged. "Well, why would they? It's not like they're required to tell you someone went a bit strange before they died. And honestly, David, we thought it was just her old age. She was alone, still grieving her husband, probably not eating properly, and loneliness can do odd things to the mind. Bill nodded along. We didn't think it was worth mentioning it when you moved in. We didn't want to put ideas in your head about nothing. The conversation moved on after that, but the damage was done. That night, laying in bed with the windows open to let in the cooler night air, I couldn't shake the feeling that we weren't alone. Every noise seemed amplified, loaded with meaning. Unable to sleep, I'm staring at the alarm clock. It was 3:40, and I knew I wouldn't rest until it had gone 3:48 without any incident. And then, at 3:47 exactly, I felt it. A slow, deliberate pressure at the bottom of our bed, on Janet's side. The covers began pulling downwards, just slightly, maybe an inch or two, just enough to notice. I sat bolt upright, heart hammering in my chest so hard I thought I may have a heart attack myself. I turned on the bedside lamp. The sudden light was harsh and revealing, but revealed nothing. The room was empty, the door was closed, everything was as it had been. Janet stirred but didn't wake. She mumbled something and rolled over. But it was the exact time Sophie had experienced the same thing. I didn't sleep the rest of that night. I sat with the lamp on, watching the room, watching every shadow. They suddenly became suspicious. Until daylight crept through the shutters of the window and the room looked normal again. The next night, no sleep. Fixated on that clock again, dreading 3:47. I'd been tense all day, snapping at Janet over nothing. She'd even asked if I was feeling okay, if I'd had any sort of ailments. But I told her I was fine and to stop bothering me. When bedtime came, I lay there rigid, watching the clock. 3:45, 3:46, 3:40. Right on cue, the covers moved. This time on my side. A slow, firm pull from the bottom of the bed. Deliberate and unmistakable. I grabbed the covers instinctively, holding tight, and I felt resistance. Something was pulling back. Not hard, not aggressive, but persistent. Janet! I shook her awake with my free hand, still gripping the covers with my other. Janet, wake up! She bolted upright, confused, frightened. What? What's wrong? Are you okay? The covers, I said, and I could hear my voice shaking like a child's. Something's pulling my covers. But as soon as she'd fully woken, it had stopped. The resistance vanished. And we now sat there in the lamplight, both wide awake, and I told her everything. The fact we'd dismissed Sophie's experience. The feeling of being watched in the bathroom I'd had for weeks. Janet's face went pale. Why didn't you tell me? I didn't want to scare you. I thought I was imagining things. I thought I was being paranoid. Neither of us slept for the rest of the night. Or the next. We started leaving lights on throughout the house, but it didn't help. Every night at 3:47 without fail, the covers would pull. Sometimes on my side, sometimes Janet's. Sometimes both at once. We'd both now acclimatized to staying awake until at least 3:47, almost anticipating it, laying there tense as the time approached. Then, unbelievably, it started getting worse. One night in late July, I was awoke about maybe 2:30, again needing the toilet. I got out of bed carefully, trying not to disturb Janet, and as I stepped into the hallway, I froze. There were three figures stood at the end of the corridor. Near the doorway to the spare room where Sophie had slept. They were completely black. Like shadows, but solid shadows. Dense. Three-dimensional. Not like a shadow on a wall. Like solid darkness shaped into human form. The tallest one was nearly 7 feet, at a guess. But it seemed an unnatural height. Very broad shoulders. The middle one was average height, maybe 5'10". And the smallest was around 4 feet tall, child-sized. They didn't move. They just stood there in complete silence. And even though I couldn't see any facial features, no eyes, no mouth, nothing, I could feel them watching me. The air felt heavy, thick, like trying to breathe through a wet cloth. My breath caught in my throat. I couldn't move. I couldn't speak. I couldn't even think properly. Every instinct was screaming at me to run, but my legs wouldn't cooperate. And then, the tallest figure spoke. And its voice was exactly, and I mean exactly, like Janet. "Come here, love. It's all right. It's me." The voice was warm, familiar. Janet. The same tone she used when comforting me after a bad day. But it was coming from a 7-foot-tall shadow. I instinctively spun round so fast I nearly fell, grabbing the bedroom doorframe for balance. Janet was still in bed, fast asleep, her back to me, breathing steadily. I looked back at the hallway and they were gone. Just an empty corridor. The nightlight casting its pathetic glow. Shadows in all the normal places. I decided I didn't need the toilet anymore. I got back into bed, pulled the covers up to my chin despite the heat, and I lay there trembling until morning finally came. I told Janet over breakfast. My hands were officially shaking so badly I could barely hold my coffee cup. She didn't question it. She didn't tell me I was being daft or suggest it was a dream. She just reached out and held my hand from across the table and said, "We need to do something about this." "But what?" "We'd sunk everything into this place, every penny from selling the house in Cheshire, our savings, everything. We couldn't just walk away. Where would we go? How would we afford things?" The figures started appearing more frequently after that. I'd see them in doorways during the day now, not just at night. In my peripheral vision. But I'd catch their movement. And there they'd be, stood in the kitchen doorway, in the archway to the courtyard, at the end of the hallway. Always the same three. Always silent, except for that one time they'd spoken Janet's voice, of course. When I turned to look directly at them, they'd be gone. But there would be a definite cold in that area that they'd leave behind. Like someone opening a freezer. And then Janet saw them too. Then she admitted she'd been seeing them for about a week, but didn't want to say anything. The same way I'd kept quiet about feeling watched. We'd both been trying to protect each other, and in doing so we'd allowed it to get worse. And almost like our discussion about both seeing these figures sort of created something, sometimes it wasn't just the covers that were being pulled. They would be accompanied by the figures, watching us, stood at the end of the bed. The tall one in the middle, the medium one on the left, the child on the right, just standing, watching, sometimes just for a moment before they'd vanish. And I do mean vanish, I don't mean dissipate, they would vanish. Sometimes they'd stay for minutes, and we'd lie there frozen, too terrified to breathe, let alone move. We stopped going into the back bedroom entirely. There was a completely different feeling in there. It was as if that was their base. So the door stayed closed, and neither of us would go in it. We started sleeping with every light in the house on. Electricity bill be damned. And then came the night in mid-August that broke us completely. Watching the clock as we did, 3:45, 3:46, 3:47. This time the covers didn't pull slowly. They were ripped completely off the bed with such force that the bottom sheet came with them from under us. Janet screamed, a raw sound of pure terror. I reached out for the lamp, but before my hand could touch it, I felt something on top of me. A weight, heavy, cold, pressing down on my chest, forcing me back into the mattress with enough force it knocked the air from my lungs. I tried to shout, to call for Janet. I tried to scream for help, but no sound came out. Nothing. Like my voice had been completely stolen, my vocal cords paralyzed. I could hear myself trying to make noise in my throat, but nothing emerged. Next, I could feel hands, cold, impossibly strong, like iron wrapped in ice, holding my arms down against the bed. Something else pressing on my throat, not exactly choking me, but making it hard to breathe, like someone had their hand wrapped around my windpipe and was slowly increasing pressure. In the darkness, the lamp still not on, I could still see them. The three figures were around our bed. Two of them, the tall one and the medium one, were on my side of the bed. And I could feel them holding me down, their hands like ice on my skin. The third one, the small figure, was on Janet's side. And I could hear her trying to scream, making the strangled, voiceless sounds I was making. She was thrashing, struggling, trying to fight it off. And I was completely helpless to help. And then I felt it. A sharp dragging across my shoulder. Not cutting deep enough to be life-threatening, but definitely a deep scratch. Deliberate and slow. Like someone drawing lines on my skin with a very sharp pen. Once, twice, three times. The pain was bright and hot. I could hear Janet making muffled sobbing sounds, and I knew they were doing the same to her. This attack maybe lasted 30 seconds, maybe a minute. Time was distorted. It felt endless. And then they all disappeared. The weight lifted off my chest. My arms and my voice came back in a rush. I heard myself gasping for air, making sounds like a wounded animal. I fumbled for the lamp with shaking hands and finally got it on. The harsh light flooded the room and the three figures were gone. Janet was sitting up, sobbing, gasping for air, clutching at her throat with both hands. Her face was sheet white, tears streaming down her cheeks. I looked down at my shoulder and saw three long scratches, parallel and deliberate. Already welling with bright red blood, like a big scratch. They ran from near my collarbone down to just under my armpit, maybe 6 inches long each. Janet, I managed to say, my voice hoarse. Are you hurt? She turned and I saw her shoulder. Four distinct scratch marks across her left shoulder, identical to mine in their deliberation. Deep enough to bleed, but shallow enough they didn't need stitches. But unmistakable in their intention. We didn't stay another night. We didn't even pack. We threw some clothes in a bag, our toiletries, our passports, important documents, and we jumped in the car. This was 4:15 in the morning. I know that because when I turned the car on, the first thing you see was the clock. It was still dark. We drove straight to Maureen and Bill's. I leaned on their doorbell until the lights came on inside. Bill answered in his dressing gown, ready to be angry, but when he saw the state we were in, shaking, crying, he said nothing and just opened the door wider, letting us in. They took us in without question. I think the genuine distress we were in was obvious. Maureen made sweet tea while Bill helped me clean and bandage both mine and Janet's scratches. They didn't ask many questions that first night. They simply gave us their sofa and some blankets and let us try to calm down. We stayed on that sofa for 3 days while we frantically searched for another property. We did not consider going back into that villa. Not to sleep, not to collect our things, not for anything. Bill was kind enough to go over during the day and pack up our essential belongings whilst we sat in a cafe, unable to be alone. The estate agent, the same one we'd bought through, thought we were mad when we called to put the villa back on the market. We'd only been there a few months. She tried to talk us out of it. You will lose money, the fees alone. But we didn't care about the money. We wanted out. We wanted to be free of that place. We ended up finding a small apartment closer to the centre. Yes, it was more expensive than we'd wanted to pay, and it was tighter on space with only one bedroom instead of three. But it was a modern building with other people around. Families above and below, neighbours we could hear moving about. And that presence of other living people, which we thought we'd wanted to avoid, felt crucial. Like a buffer against whatever had been in that villa. We moved into the apartment mid-August, and we haven't been back to that villa since, not once. The agent is handling everything, the viewings, the sale, all of it. We signed papers giving them full authority. I don't care if we take a loss, I just never want to see that place again. Our scratches healed within a week. But we both still have faint scars. 3 parallel lines on my shoulder, 4 on Janet's. Sometimes I catch her in the bathroom looking at them in the mirror, and I know she's reliving that night the same way I do. We did get the dream of retiring to Malaga. Beautiful weather, good food, friendly people, everything we ever wanted. We just didn't expect it to come with 3 nightmares we'd never forget. Thanks for reading, and I know it sounds mental, and I wouldn't believe this myself if someone told me this, but I swear on my life, everything I've said in this tale is true. The scars on our shoulders are real, pictures attached. The terror was real. Whatever was in that villa was real. I don't know what they were. I don't know what they wanted. I just know we were lucky to get out when we did. Sincerely, David, Janet, Malaga. Well, David and Janet, thank you so, so much for such a terrifying experience for episode 3. Now, the pictures mentioned by David, he's asked me to not put them out publicly, and that was a request via Janet. Now, obviously, we will not do that. As in, we will follow their instructions to the letter. So, thank you, David. The pictures are terrifying, but it did strike me with a thought. We often hear of people saying, I woke up, or I know someone who woke up with 3 scratches somewhere on their body. What Dave describes here is different, and this for me is what I call a validator. He describes these lines, these parallel lines, being done individually. Not as you would imagine, as we probably all imagined, some claw mark from a beast. And if that's the case, if these things were drawn individually, It throws the whole thought process behind three scratches down the back, etc., into a whole new world of thinking, a whole new world of theory, and in all honesty, it's a completely separate podcast in its own right. But thank you, David, thank you, Janet, for such a terrifying tale for episode 3. Don't forget, guys, if you wish to hear more, we have our Patreon tiers that you can sign up for a week free trial in our show notes. But until next time, stay safe, and remember, when you're discussing the paranormal, always leave some of your disbelief at the door. And I'll speak to you next time, right here on The Dark Paranormal.
Here's something most people don't realize. Great sleep doesn't happen by accident. It starts with what you're sleeping on. That's why I switched to Sheiks. Their bedding is made from the same performance fabrics you'd find in elite athletic wear, but designed to help you sleep better. If you run hot at night, these sheets help you stay cool and dry. If you love that cozy, ridiculously soft feel, they've got that too. Comfort that stays consistent from the moment you hop into bed. And for anyone with an adjustable base, this is a game changer. Their Stay Fit corners are the best I've ever tried. No slipping, no popping off, even when the bed moves. When your days are demanding, Sheiks helps you wake up restored, not run down. Try them for yourself with their 60-night risk-free guarantee. Upgrade your sleep at Sheiks.com.